Morning! Off to see the groundhog? Think it'll be in early spring? Hi, how you doing? This is Ken Hudson Campbell from Groundhog Day saying hi.
I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm a woodchuck, Steve. I star on many of the insurance company other commercials, Steve. Maybe you've seen me.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Those insurance commercials. Do the insurance companies need more money? Is that what's happening? Is that why I've seen all those commercials all the time?
Well, Steve, it's a certain week, and I like to chuck wood.
They have a lot of money. They have a lot of money, and they can spend it on advertising, that's for sure.
Some people want to know how much I can chuck.
It's another important week for a different rodent. It is Groundhog Day week, Chip.
Steve, we don't recognize groundhog. I don't think they're a real entity. They're like a chupacabra.
Well, that's kind of fitting because I did a guest hosting on CF3 this week. So the chupacabra sometimes is a part of some of those cult films and finds on that show.
It's like the Bigfoot, Steve.
And we were talking all... He's just out of focus. That's why you can't photograph the Bigfoot. He's just actually out of focus.
Probably. Yeah. Probably. If he exists at all. But woodchucks do. Do exist, Steve.
Yes. This week on CF3, we were discussing the Groundhog Day movie from 1993. It's Groundhog Day again this Sunday, February 2nd, 2020. It's also a Super Day for a Sunday Bowl.
We can say the word Super Bowl, Steve.
He said it. That's it. We're getting sued.
A suburb owl.
The Super Bowl is happening on Sunday, and just got news that Bill Murray was in Woodstock, Illinois on Saturday filming a Jeep commercial where he may have been playing a certain character from a certain movie. Seeing as the Super Bowl is on the same day as Groundhog Day, there might be a really funny Bill Murray Groundhog Day commercial in that mix.
And we do hope that, because Woodstock is a great place. They do have a Groundhog Festival.
Today. Yep, starting on Thursday, you can go to Woodstock, Illinois, go be a part of their celebration of the Groundhog Day on Sunday and the movie Groundhog Day that was filmed entirely in Woodstock.
Is there a woodchucking stand?
You could probably make it over by the snowball fight. Yes. Over by the snowball fight, maybe there's some wood shucking.
By the gazebo. Ask about it. by the opera house. Just ask about it.
You know, we haven't gone up there in 5 years. Last time we went up there for too much scrolling was 5 years ago.
I love Woodstock. Woodstock is a place to go and you can take a loved one and go to a dinner, a fancy dinner. It certainly is a city, even though it's kind of in a rural setting. So they've got this beautiful square and lots to do up there. I like it.
It's fun. It's a fun place to go. Let's go next weekend and be a part of Groundhog Day 2020.
Down, get film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Chip, did I tell you how excited I was about the new Star Trek series that came out last week?
Well, tell us about it, Steve. Make it so.
Make it so. The new Star Trek series is called Picard, and it is the continuing story of Jean-Luc Picard, played by Sir Patrick Stewart.
Charles Xavier, Steve.
Uh-huh. And the continuing adventures of our favorite captain from Star Trek The Next Generation.
So there's obviously a whole instruction that he's giving us on how to be an actor, Steve.
Oh, I tell you what. This is definitely a master class in acting. Patrick Stewart is an older man. He looks like an older man. His voice has got a little bit more gravelly in the last few years.
Sure.
But the power that he can bring to this story is just stunning. There, in the story, should we say spoilers at this point?
Well, we can talk a little bit about it. I, my understanding is it takes place in Eastern Europe, in Romania.
No, Chip. No. This is... Okay, from now on, this is spoilers. If you don't want to know about Picard, you should fast forward about 4 minutes so we can talk about Picard. No, Chip. Captain Picard retired to France.
Do they have some goulash?
The Chateau Picard, where he has taken over the vineyard and is making the wine, is what's happening. But yes, the Romulans who live on... The Romulans who live on the grounds with him are there because he rescued the Romulan race from a supernova that happened to Romulus in the year 2387.
And they're very gifted winemakers.
They are gifted in all sorts of ways. The one has a very interesting Irish accent, which really bothered my wife. She was like, "Why is that Romulan Irish?" Well, she learned English from Irish TV. That was my explanation.
Well, the series will end sometime in March, won't it, Steve?
With the Romulans celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Of course.
Absolutely right. The idea here...
There are no snakes at Picard's vineyard, Steve.
That's right. In Romania.
In Romania.
The idea of 2387 comes into play here because that is a plot point from the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot series where Prime Spock, played by Leonard Nimoy, said... out loud in that movie, "I tried to save Romulus from a supernova in 2387, but I was unsuccessful." This timeline, Picard was the one who went to save the Romulans, to evacuate the whole planet, and he was successful. He brought the Romulan race to Mars, and then... something terrible happened. All the synthetic life forms of the galaxy suddenly and without warning attacked and destroyed Utopia Planitia, which is the space dock where the Enterprise was built.
Of course, Steve.
Am I going too deep now? Is it?
Oh, no. Okay. No.
All right.
No,
Utopia Planitia is very right important. Here. And then because they destroyed that, Mars was set on fire, and that fire is still raging 15 years later in the storyline of Picard.
So Mars is on fire?
Yes.
Well, that certainly sounds mythic to me.
Uh-huh. And this is very much a 21st century fear that we have. The idea of the AIs, the robots, the synthetic life forms doing something that we didn't expect them to do and destroying us.
Picard should have listened to Elon Musk, Steve.
Uh-huh. Elon Musk certainly is a theme here because Elon Musk is trying to get us to Mars.
Well, he also has a certain warning against AI, Steve.
And he looks at the future of technology as being possibly not conducive to human life, not much less Romulans.
And he also seems to enjoy a certain herb that is legal here now in Illinois.
How does that become a part of Star Trek?
I have no idea, Steve, but, you know, there's a vineyard, and the Romulans are making wine, too, Steve.
Okay. Then, in the story, a young lady named Dodge is attacked and activated is the words that the attackers use. She is suddenly given superhuman powers and a vision of Jean-Luc Picard appears in her memory. She goes to him to find sanctuary, and Picard, spoilers, believes that she is an android and the descendant of Data's neural net.
We probably need to call Deckard in at this point.
This is absolutely Blade Runner. This is absolute because in the story, after the synthetics destroyed Utopia Planitia, all study of synthetic life forms was deemed illegal.
Well, they sent Han Solo after him.
It wasn't Han Solo, but that's fine. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. Deckard. Okay. The idea here of this 21st century Star Trek is wonderful. This is quite possibly the best Star Trek that has been produced in the last 15 years.
And that's really good to know because Disney certainly was very hit and miss with their treatment of Star Wars.
Right.
And Star Trek was certainly just ignored during their 50th anniversary.
Yep.
So I think that this is at least the attempt at some redemption.
Right. Star Trek Discovery, which has been on CBS All Access for a couple of years now, is good Star Trek. It's not bad. It's very good. This is great Star Trek. But remember, I'm looking at it from a next generation perspective. I've always been a fan of the next generation of Star Trek more than the original Shatner version of Star Trek. This is my Star Trek, and boy, have they given us the fan service that we wanted in the first episode of this.
Now, this comes out weekly, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So CBS All Access, you have to pay for it, and like you, maybe waiting till the end of the run of this series is the right choice to invest in 1 month of this service instead of two.
And for those who are interested in watching this series, do you think that there is some backstory, something that they should view to prepare themselves?
Yeah, you know, the official list of backstory that I talked about last week is still in our show notes. You should go through those episodes, but I need to add at least one more episode to that list that I was surprised by this current list.
Is there a Baby Yoda in this?
There's a baby android in this that's not exactly a baby. Spoilers still. We're still in spoiler territory. The one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation that wasn't listed in the official backstory was The Offspring, the episode where Commander
Data...
The
band?
Yes.
The band? They showed up. Were they singing a song?
Like Sabrina, yeah.
Did they do Sabotage?
No, that's Beastie Boys. The episode The Offspring is the episode where Commander Data constructed his own daughter, Lal, and wanted very much to have a daughter. That experiment was not successful.
Sabotage.
But maybe, just maybe, a certain scientist from Starfleet got his way and was able to create a Data-like android.
Sabotage.
We're going to see. We're going to see if that first episode was just an Easter egg or if there's a certain scientist who is going to be returning to Picard. We'll find out in subsequent episodes. I really endorse this as the best Star Trek in a long time. I really think that you should go find someone who has CBS All Access, sit down on a couch with them, and watch this. I also got a chance to see another space TV show this week.
This one stars Olaf.
Yes. This is Avenue 5 on HBO.
Not Avenue Q. Steve.
Right. This premiered last week.
Are there any Muppets in this?
Not yet, but certainly potential for Muppet puppetry happening in this show. This is the story of a space captain who is in charge of a space cruise ship, kind of like WALL-E.
Kind of like
Starship Titanic, kind of like Voyage of the Damned from Doctor Who. This huge, enormous spacecraft.
Are Judy and Gopher there?
Yes. This is very much like Love Boat, for sure.
Carol Channing?
She's dead. She's not showing up.
Nipsey Russell?
I think he's dead too, isn't he?
Oh, well.
70s TV shows. There is a guy from Benson in this.
Oh, there he is. Robert Goulet.
No, he's dead too.
He's a Force Ghost, Steve.
He's dead too.
He shows up as a Force Ghost.
Ethan Phillips, who was in Benson and was Neelix in Star Trek Voyager, is a part of the crew. He's a retired hippie with a ponytail astronaut who is showing all of the passengers information about space travel and being an astronaut and going to Saturn. But Hugh Laurie plays the captain of this ship until there is a terrible tragedy. Something awful happens on the ship and throws their trajectory off course.
So this is sort of a Gilligan's Island type of challenge.
There's a Gilligan's Island. There's a Love Boat. There's a Lost in Space element to all of this.
They were on a 3-hour tour, it seems.
Now they are on a 3-year journey to get back to Earth because their trajectory was thrown off so much. They have a meeting, and it is found out that Hugh Laurie, who has been doing his American accent up to this point, is actually British and has been faking his knowledge of being a captain this whole time. He's never actually been in charge of the ship, and he doesn't know what to do in this emergency situation.
This is where they need to have a Stubing come in and try to help him out, Steve.
Unfortunately, the guy who was in charge of maintaining the ship is the first casualty of the accident.
Oh, well.
So nobody on the ship actually knows how to fly the ship.
Well, now you have Josh Gad with his long blonde locks.
With his big long blonde wig for some silly reason. This is good. This is not Star Trek good. This is fun.
It's forward.
It is funny. It is laugh out loud funny. And I look forward to the rest of it.
And with this large cruise ship going through space, you could really have anybody could show up for an episode or two.
That was the most fascinating part of the first episode, is the size of the sets for this are unbelievable. I am sure that they did not build physical sets, the size, the scope of what we're talking about in the filming. It must be digital. It must be trickery. But the number of human people that are in every shot of this, there's 50 people on screen at any given moment, and it is the stunt work.
Yes.
For the accident that occurs, there's 50 people flying from one side of the ship to the other.
Are they all superheroes?
No, they're just in space, and when you rock the boat, don't come a knocking. The list on IMDb of people who are in this, there's probably 100 names of people who are in this. And yes, they're probably going to get to some very interesting guest stars.
Gil Gerard? Aaron Gray? Do you think they'll be there?
I would love Aaron Gray. Any day. Bring Aaron Gray onto your space show anytime. I will watch the heck out of that.
Steve, it's dark. There's certainly to be some mysteries going on. And certainly satanic stuff going on. Who would I watch for that?
Yeah, the third.
Or what would I watch for that?
Yeah, the third part of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina hit Netflix this week, and this is the story of a young witch finding out who she is. If you remember season two, she found out that she is the daughter of Satan himself, Lucifer Morningstar, and she is now the queen of hell and trying to find her way through that part of her existence, trying to fight evil while being evil incarnate.
Now, unlike the first two shows that we were talking about, this one, they released the entire season at the right time.
Like
honest people should, Steve.
In 2020, it's very difficult to release 1 hour of a 10-hour story.
Good job, Netflix.
Because I'm really looking forward to the next episode of both Star Trek Picard and Avenue 5. I only have access to one episode. But yes, you're right. Netflix released the entire story. Storyline, beginning, middle, and end for The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. So, we watched all of it in the course of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Well, that's the beauty. Was it 8 shows?
Yeah.
Okay. So what you end up getting is just the third season.
Mm-hmm.
Did it end with a cliffhanger? Do you think it's over, or do you think this is it?
I believe this might be the end of the story of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't love part three nearly as much as I loved part one and two. The storytelling is there. The themes of we can work together, we have a way to fight these evil things, and mm-hmm. we can do it are great themes.
Sure.
It's not quite as thrilling as the first two seasons.
So as we were preparing for this, we were kind of talking and we're saying, why was this released now and not held till October?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my first thought on that is this is to combat Disney Plus. This is this idea of just grabbing hold of Netflix subscribers and saying, listen, we have a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if they don't announce two more seasons of Stranger Things and they come out like in a year.
Right.
That type of thing.
Yeah, I didn't get the same feeling from part three, and I think part of it is because of the timing of this release.
Mm-hmm.
January is not about Satanism and darkness as much as you might think.
And let me make sure I'm very clear on this. This is certainly a playful version of it. This is based on the Archie Comics group, and certainly this is a darker take on it, certainly teens and up type of view of it. But this is, there is a 60s character with sort of a modern take on the backstory.
There's a playfulness to this that is beyond a horror movie, but there is certainly a lot of gory moments, a lot of liquids that are utilized throughout The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I don't know if there's going to be a season four of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, but I do suggest that if you haven't picked up season one and two, you should start from the beginning with this story and see if it grabs you and if you stay through season three. You got a chance to see Conan the Barbarian, but not the Arnold Schwarzenegger 80s version. This is the remake from 2011.
No, this isn't also the one that's on TBS either, Steve.
There's another one on there?
There's another Conan on TBS.
Oh, the redhead. Yes.
The redhead. This is not about him either. No, this stars Aquaman, Steve.
Yes, Jason Momoa.
Yeah, before he was Aquaman.
Yes, Jason Momoa, the current handsome, muscular guy that we want to talk to, was Conan the Barbarian in 2011.
So this is a movie I didn't see in 2011, and it wasn't like first I had to see this movie, but this is one of those movies that I wanted to see, and I didn't get to the theater this week. So I actually, it's streaming right now on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And so I ended up watching it while my daughter did homework, and she certainly did not like this film. But I thought it was okay. I don't think it's a great film, but if you like superheroes, and this certainly is, I mean, what do we got here? We got a big muscular guy who's on a quest, who's drinking wine, and you know, finds beautiful women, and there's some sorcery involved to it. Yeah, I think this is fine. I said 50 out of 100. It's okay. I didn't see it in 2011 when it came out. You know, it's 2020, Steve. It's a 9-year-old film.
Yeah.
And I'm really surprised they didn't go ahead and make you know, a series of it. Conan would be a perfect property for Netflix or something like that, where they could just do, you know, send out a season here or there, and then take the original pulp material and kind of move forward. Like I said, I don't think these are, like, ever great stories, but they certainly are adventure stories. Not any different than maybe Picard should be.
And sometimes you just need an interesting adventure.
Sure.
That quest to find something.
Yeah, it's not Lord of the Rings,
yeah.
but it's got books that you can actually use as source material. So I think that there is, this really could be a nice series. I mean, Witcher is on Netflix right now.
Everybody keeps talking about that. Have you watched that?
I have not. But
everybody talks about it. I've never seen a minute of it, but I everybody tells me I should be watching Witcher.
Well, it's kind of, they're comparing it to Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And so I can understand why everybody's looking for a series that they can grab onto. Stranger Things, Sabrina, you know, things that, Picard, things that people can, a mass of people can watch. And all of a sudden, you've got something to talk about. But anyway, I said 50 out of 100. I think that's pretty reasonable. This is not great. But certainly, if you like superhero films and don't mind being in a mythical time and going through, you know, this adventure, you're going to be fine.
There you go.
Hi, everyone. This week, I'm talking about Feedback, which I caught on Fright Fest in the summer. And it's now out on video demand for you to watch wherever you happen to be. Feedback follows the events that unfold when an outspoken radio show host, Jarvis Dolan, is held hostage live on air, where terrible truths are uncovered and grim realities realised. Any more than that would be a massive spoiler, so I'll just leave it at that so you can enjoy it the way I did. This is one of those films that uses limited settings to amp up the claustrophobic feelings within the characters, and it does it well. Tension and paranoia are built up here in a way that makes the audience not entirely sure what's going on or who to believe. It's a film that's very much rooted in the realities of today. With accountability and privilege at the forefront of the story, Feedback manages to make a sad and still valid point to the audience about the world we live in and the things people do. Eddie Marsden, the lead role as Jarvis, is fabulous to watch throughout. He garners sympathy, frustration, and then anger from the audience as he deftly flip-flops in a realistic and shocking way as the story unfolds. If you're looking for light-hearted horror, this isn't going to be one for you. But if you want something that's scary, real, that lingers in your thoughts long after watching and that you're going to want to talk about, Feedback needs to be added to your watch list. This film deserves to make some waves for sure. As always, if you want to hear more ramblings about film, geekery and more, you can follow me on Twitter at @filmswithstacy, where you can also find a link to my website for longer film and TV reviews. Until next time.
Opening this week, there's some movies that hopefully are just fine. The first one is called Hansel and Gretel. This is a dark
Gretel
version.
And Hansel.
Is it? Look at you. Look at you. The first one is called Gretel and Hansel. Look at that.
It is. Steve, what I noticed about this trailer was there's a ball of yarn that comes out of that lady's mouth.
That's what you noticed. This is a very dark take on that old familiar fairy tale. The idea of the children in peril and the strangers who are coming to eat them.
It's almost as dark as like The Princess and the Pea, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Once Upon a Mattress. It's a wonderful musical. Everybody should get tickets now. We're showing it in March.
So this is a horror film. It looks like it's rated R.
Yes. This is. Do you think this is a January release so that it's ready for streaming in October? Is that why we're seeing this in January?
Possibly. Or it'll be ready for Easter. You never know, Steve.
I don't know. I don't know about those dark times in January. But
this is where they fit
it in. Very dark version of the story. The Rhythm Section is another movie. This is a young lady who's been through an awful time. Her family has been killed, and she has nothing left to lose. She trains hard and goes after those people that did the crime.
This is the revenge story with the mom being the revenge person.
Haven't we seen this movie about 20 times at this point?
Well, male or female. I mean, there's been a history of movies being the same story. And this is the latest one. This, of course, stars Blake Lively and Jude Law.
Two very handsome people.
He's back from Cree, I think.
There's so many Jude Law movies, and that's the one you would go with?
Well, I was going to go with AI, but, you know, Steven Spielberg wouldn't let me.
Don't talk about the AI. Elon Musk says we have to be careful about that. This looks fine. Again, haven't we told this story before? Isn't revenge a dish best served cold, and having hot actors wouldn't do it?
Steve, what if you didn't like your boss? Is there a movie that you could go and kind of relive your daily life?
You mean Office Space?
Well, that's a different. That's a totally different. That's a humorous one.
Totally different.
How about Swimming with Sharks with Kevin Spacey?
Yes. The movie this week is called The Assistant, and this is about a young lady who is the assistant to a powerful entertainment mogul, and she sees some things that he's doing, and she doesn't know what to do about it. Well, she's powerless.
He's not a nice guy, and certainly she is not in a very good, empowering work environment, Steve. Mm-hmm. Seems to be a very meaning one.
Seems to be ripped from the headlines, huh? Seems to be a story that we've been telling for a couple of decades now. This looks very interesting. I don't know that it's the kind of movie that I would sit through, but I'm sure that there's some great messages about what do you do?
Steve, I'm looking for some reading movies. Are there any reading movies for me?
Yes. Your foreign films of the week are...
It's a Sony classic, Steve.
This is a Sony classic. It's called The Traitor. This is the real-life story of a Sicilian mob boss in the 1980s.
It's still from a certain point of view, Steve.
It's all in Italian with subtitles.
It looks like it's Spanish, right?
No, this is Italian, not Spanish.
So, Spanish-Italian.
I told
you
about that, right? When we went to Italy and none of us spoke Italian, but the teachers that we had with us who were from Mexico, they could speak Spanish with an Italian accent, and all the Italians would understand them perfectly.
Oh, how awesome.
It was my favorite part of Italy.
So this is kind of like The Sopranos, Godfather, Goodfellas.
Yes. Scarface.
Scarface.
The main
all
character.
All the tropes are there, Steve.
It's all there, and this is based on the real life story. Not my kind of movie, but that's okay. It looks very interesting.
Steve, let's get to the Middle East. Is there a wonderful film that I could read?
Yes, there is a movie called Incitement. This is the, again, real-life story of the assassination of Israel's Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, but this one is told from the point of view of the assassin and all of the feelings that this man had that led him to thinking that the best course was to assassinate Yitzhak Rabin.
And this is in Spanish too, Steve.
This is Hebrew, which is kind of like Spanish. But yes, this is another reading movie. You have to read the subtitles. There's a lot of powerful moments in this trailer. I mean, there's a lot to think about with perspective of why somebody would choose to assassinate a leader like this.
Well, it's been going on for hundreds and thousands of years, Steve.
Uh-huh.
Book it.
brings us to our book and our book of the week. You know, we said that it's Groundhog Day again, Chip. Isn't that crazy? That
it's like every year this comes around.
It seems like I've been reliving this day over and over again.
And I keep saying, you know, if we could just have summer come or spring show up sooner, Steve.
Yeah, that would be nice. Get a little, I don't know what's going on with the weather. The weather is crazy.
We have snow, Steve.
Sometimes we have snow and sometimes it's lovely. I don't even know anymore. I got a chance to read How to Write Groundhog Day. This was written in 2012 by the screenwriter of Groundhog Day, Danny Rubin. He is a professor of screenwriting. He has taught courses on how to write a screenplay, and this is a great way to learn the craft of putting a story together and making it into a movie.
And his former students say that once you've taken one of his classes, you've taken them all. They seem to go the same every time.
It's the same every time, over and over again. We talk about learning and more information on this show all the time. There are experts out there who know how to do things, and we can learn from those experts.
And the most wonderful part about this is Groundhog Day, this movie, was released a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And yet we still keep talking about it because it resonates mm-hmm. with us. I mean, it's almost like on the Star Wars level. I mean, it comes around every year, and all of a sudden, everybody's got this spiritual message of, like, what is this all about?
The philosophy of this story is baked into the screenplay. This screenwriter decided that he wanted to write this spiritual story and wrap it up in this silly little comedy.
And he's not a Jedi, Steve.
He might be a Jedi, but as long as he's not living in England. This is such a tightly packed story that, yes, it repeats itself over and over again, but the messaging of Groundhog Day is very strong. We
are assuming people know about this movie. This is a movie that starred Bill Murray. The premise is a gentleman wakes up and he relives the same day over and over and over. We don't know really how long it could be. It could be 10 days. It could be 100 days. It could be 1,000 days. It could be centuries.
Yeah.
Where he relived the same day over and over and over. And he goes through every possible feeling. I mean, from apathy to being ultimately engaged to being the Superman, to self-improvement. I mean, you name some feeling that you could have or mm-hmm. something you could experience.
All the experiences of life, anything.
And the deal is he just knows this day. And by virtue of this, he knows everyone who is in that town, all the secrets.
Mm-hmm. And finds a way out of that situation by finding that self-improvement, by being the better person, by solving the unsolvable maze that is human life.
And I think that's where the story turns, because we start off with our gentleman being a very bitter person.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly not happy to be in Punxsutawney to give this report. He feels, you know, it's beneath him. And he eventually comes to the point where he recognizes life is life, and he has an impact on it that can be positive, and he improves himself. So he makes himself happy. He recognizes he's in charge of his happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, he recognizes the power he has to the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, there's this growth that happens in it, and it all happens in this nice little, we call it a movie, but the script, and so tell me a little bit, and this, let me back up. This script is not based on any short story. There's no book that was written off of. This was an original story.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is wonderful. So let's talk about maybe the original script that this gentleman put together. To put this together.
Right. This took years. Danny Rubin wrote an original script in 1990 for this movie, and it went through all sorts of rewrites. Harold Ramis, the director, got into the writing process with him.
Did he talk about how they met and how they got involved in this project?
I don't recall exactly the story of how Harold Ramis became a part of this, but he was a part of the studio, and the studio presented this original screenplay to Harold Ramis, and he wanted to make this story.
Okay.
Then we got Bill Murray, and he added his own flair to this. The original story, the weatherman in the story, was a 30-year-old man who had very childish ways of looking at things. When Bill Murray came on board, the character became a much older gentleman who was already set in his ways in a lot of ways.
So you're just talking about it would be a very different movie if Steve Carell was the weatherman. It would be a very different movie if Jim Carrey was the weatherman, or even Will Ferrell. I mean, so
Bill Murray is Bill Murray. We've talked a lot about who Bill Murray is. The Gavin Edwards book, The Tao of Bill Murray, goes into detail about who that man is in our lives. And yes, there's no doubt that this movie changed when Bill Murray became a part of it.
Well, no one plays this just this aloof person who is sort of disengaged from life.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, more than Bill Murray. Bill Murray's got this way of floating through his movies where you're kind of aware, like he's kind of aware, but, but you know, it's just, it's hilarious.
And the Bill Murray philosophy of being engaged in life, really being present in the moment, is something that I think came out of his filming of this film.
Okay.
He and Harold Ramis had a huge falling out after
this movie. Do we discuss why that happened?
They disagreed about what comedic things should be happening while they were filming. Bill Murray was also going through a divorce at the time, so he had a different perspective on how things should go.
And this movie could, I mean, there are dark parts to it, but it could have been very, very dark. I mean, he kills himself multiple times.
And some of those dark moments where you see darkness in Bill Murray's eyes, that might have been real darkness that was happening in his real life that he was bringing to the character at the time.
Okay.
Harold Ramis and Bill Murray did not speak for more than 20 years after the filming of Groundhog Day. Bill Murray was not willing to change who he was, even after going through this philosophical viewpoint of changing who you are is important. Finally, Bill went to Harold Ramis's bedside, his deathbed, and apologized and made amends right before Harold Ramis passed away.
Well, you start recognizing as you get older just how short life can be. And when you're young, it just seems like, oh, you've got years and years and years and years and years. And then you turn to be middle-aged, and middle-aged now is not middle-aged in the past. You know, middle-age is 50, 55. What is middle-age? But this idea of you know, recognizing that, do you have 10 years left? Do you have 20 years left? Do you have 30 years left?
And what can you do with your time regardless? Sure. What can you do today? Not worry about the 10 years, 20 years. This is one day, February 2nd, over and over again. What can you do about it today?
So tell me, all right, as the script progressed, let's talk a little bit about Andy McDowell's character when Bill Murray's working with her. And yeah, there's a natural part of it. They create a rapport. He changes. He, you know, he's kind of a jerk, and she's certainly very accommodating to him. And they eventually have a connection. And then, you know, there's this part where he keeps reliving this day, trying to
connect.
Yeah, well, pigeonhole her into manipulating her. There is a better word for it. And it turns against him. This ability to force someone to live, I don't know, you can somehow manipulate someone through this little maze to get to this prize. And ultimately, life is not this mathematical formula to get there.
And relationships certainly aren't a mathematical formula.
Sure. I mean, you've got to allow each party to experience who they are and
appreciate each other and understand the differences that make us a good pair. I'm staring at you while I'm saying this, but I
get that. I mean, we've worked together for over 5 years. I certainly have grown personally working with him, because when you, I think I've mentioned this a number of times, once you've recognized both parties or your team, you work with people,
everybody,
your family, it doesn't matter. You all have the same goal. You're not working against each other.
Right.
You're different people. You have different views on things.
Different methods to get to that same goal.
And once you accept that, you know, everybody, I'm going to use this example. If we all want success, you know, we could all define it differently, and we all could define our past differently. You know, this is a revelation for Bill Murray's character through this part where, you know, he's sitting there and he says, "I'm going to learn piano because I've got
all the time in the world."
Sure, I mean literally. Tomorrow, but you know, he has all the time in the world, but tomorrow could arrive and it just moves forward from there. And that's the other part is even though he's living the same day every day, his decisions are all short-term decisions.
True.
Because tomorrow, it could just move forward.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to use an example. When he kills himself multiple times, he could wake up and not exist.
Mm-hmm.
When he robs the bank, he could be in jail tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But it just wakes up and it all goes away. And using the Andy McDowell situation, when he times the robbing of the security system that picks up the money.
Okay.
From whatever retail store, you know,
the armored car.
Yeah, he's basically counting out the seconds, and he has it all down. You know, he had to watch that. I don't know how long he had to watch that. 30 days, 60 days, whatever it is.
Right.
You got all the time in the world. And all of a sudden, you're like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, there's got to be multiple times that we didn't see that you got caught.
Right. Yeah. I think of all of those choices that we make and all of those results, all of those consequences. And he goes through every possible choice, every possible consequence. It's amazing to me how similar that is to just about every philosophy, every spiritual thinking around the world.
In fact, tell me a little bit about that. While this is a very spiritual story, it's not a religious story,
right?
But and that's why it's kind of like Star Wars and Jedi's, or as we originally understood them,
right?
So, if you are, you know, one type of religion or another, you may be able to find or connect your faith to this spiritual story.
Yeah, Danny Rubin received all sorts of messages from around the world when this movie was released. He wanted it to be a thoughtful human comedy. His highest aspiration was for it to be successful entertainment. He was not setting out a philosophy of life. He just wanted to make a fun, entertaining movie. But when he put this movie out, he started getting mail from a remarkable cross-section of people. His first note, he writes in the book here, "My first note, I remember, came from a monk in Germany. He had discovered Groundhog Day as a perfect articulation of his Christian beliefs. Another note came from a young couple who studied Jewish mystic practice and were convinced that I too must share this belief system. Rabbis and ministers have sent me copies of major sermons that they delivered based on this movie's themes, and at least one occasion, a convention of Buddhists created an event around the movie Groundhog Day."
Did they drink a lot of sweet vermouth, Steve?
He probably did and smiled a lot.
With a twist on the rocks?
and toasted to world peace. Yes.
Did they sit around stuffing donuts into their mouth?
No, probably not. That is probably not what the Buddhists did. But there is certainly a message about survival, a message about death, a message about spiritualism that is across all sorts of religions. This is not a religious film, but it's my second favorite religious film of 1993.
And this is a movie also about tolerance in many ways, because certainly he was not very respectful to Andy McDowell's character or to Chris Elliott's character,
right?
Or to Herb, who sold insurance, Steve.
Or Stephen Tobolowsky? Yeah. Ned the Head?
Ned the Head. That's the one. I'm sorry. Was it Ned? Ned. I'm
Needle
so sorry.
Nose Ned.
Needle Nose Ned. Certainly, Needle Nose Ned annoyed him.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, you know, he met the young couple here, the kid who fell out of the tree. saving the cat, you know, all, trying to save the person who, you know, life is, you're going to die that day. Mm-hmm. And life is just what it is.
And understanding that he couldn't save the guy in the alley who was going to die. He tried everything he could. He wanted to save that guy's life, but it was just his time.
Well, and that's where you get to that moment where, you know, it's just part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, there's so much to glean from this, so much to think about when you watch this movie. Was it very successful when it came out? I don't know.
It made $70 million.
Okay.
So that is a relative success for a silly little comedy movie.
Sure.
A Harold Ramis movie, maybe it's low on the money scale, but this is a movie that we keep talking about. This is a movie that we're talking about here 27 years later.
It's an evergreen, Steve. It's like Groundhog Day comes around every year.
And like I said, Bill Murray was in Woodstock, Illinois this weekend filming a commercial that very well might appear on the Super Bowl. Stephen Tobolowsky was there too.
Is he going to let the groundhog drive again?
I'm not sure what's going to happen, but it was a commercial for Jeep, so I don't think Jeep wants to have representation of the groundhog driving. That is one of the pieces of the fight between Harold Ramis and Bill Murray that is cited, is that groundhog bit Bill Murray at least three times during that scene, and he had to go through rabies treatment, and that is cited as one of the moments that really drove a spike between those two men.
Well, you can understand. I mean, yeah. It's a wild animal, Steve.
Yeah.
It's not like a woodchuck.
Yeah.
You can train a woodchuck, Steve.
That's right. This is an interesting study in how to write a story, the process of a screenplay. I do recommend that you seek this one out and go find your experts.
Sure, and you said maybe seven revisions to the script. At least that's what they're going through.
Danny Rubin, the author here, does list seven different specific instances of how this happened, what changed, but he also lists pages of notes of ideas that didn't make it into the final script.
Well, and in fact, that leads to me to believe that he almost should just write a book. You know, many years, I think, after It's a Wonderful Life, someone wrote the book.
Hmm.
Why doesn't he go ahead and try to write a book? I've read the Princess Bride book.
Okay.
That was very good. My goodness, novels and scripts are all the time. But it's amazing. Maybe there are scenes that he wanted to be part of it. That we could actually read, because, yeah, once again, they're all revelations. I guess the sphere could be as it's not as good as the movie.
Right. The movie is pretty perfect. The tightness of the story that actually made it to film is pretty perfect. I'm not sure that I want to add too much more. My identity of who this person is and who I am as a result is kind of something that I can add in my mind, that I don't necessarily want the author to change my mind on that.
Sure.
Because I've read quite a few books after the movie, and the author's idea of what the movie was versus my idea was not conducive to me liking the way that he wrote the extras.
Well, I'm very glad you read this. This seems too like a fascinating book, and my goodness, it's Groundhog Day, and we're celebrating a rodent
stage. Again. Let's go out to Woodstock and celebrate. This one's called How to Write Groundhog Day by Danny Rubin.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, it is Super Bowl weekend coming up, Chip.
And this is once again an opportunity to remind us that Super Bowl Sunday means that many people have to go to work on Monday.
And the productivity really suffers on Monday. So a young man, a teenager, has decided to petition the NFL to change the Super Bowl to Saturday.
Which I will agree with. I think we should have Super Bowl Saturday. You have a two-week space between the NFL championship games and the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like that Saturday would be the perfect day to celebrate, knowing that Sunday you have the recovery and to go to work on Monday.
And be as productive as you can be. There's some estimates that say that productivity suffers in the country on Super Bowl Monday to the tune of about $500 million in lost productivity.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
All right, so back in February 2nd, Groundhog Day, Stavo, of 2018, we did find an article saying that we can call the big game the Superb Owl.
Yeah.
We can actually say the word Super Bowl.
Without risk of the NFL getting mad at us?
Well, if we made a lot of money, Steve, maybe they would come after us. But
so
I don't
our Patreon page, patreon.com/too much scrolling.
Give us lots of money.
That we can be sued by the NFL, please.
I'm sorry. Soon we'll be doing our PBS NPR type of moments here as we go through it. Only if you order now, you get a coffee mug, Steve.
T-shirts. I'm selling T-shirts. So you can go to our T-shirt site, tpublic.toomuchscrolling.com, and get a T-shirt.
Excellent. Because, Steve, our studio here at Too Much Scrolling Plaza needs to be updated.
Always. Always. There's always something extra.
Soundproofing.
Soundproofing would be really nice.
That would be beautiful.
It'd be great.
All right. But anyway, we can say the word Super Bowl.
Okay. Can we say Oscars? Is it okay to say Oscars?
Well, Steve, that's only if there's some people to talk about the movies that came out.
Yes. Our Oscars 2020 discussion episode is coming this week. Our guests are our Oscarologist, Dane Michael from CF3, and our movie expert, Kyle Hickman, predict the winners and discuss some of the snubs for this year's ceremony.
And Kyle currently is at Sundance, making sure everything, he gets out a few more movies, Steve.
Yeah. He's got tickets to 9 movies at Sundance. I am so jealous of Kyle and his ability to see movies.
You're going to go jelly. Well, Steve, he has a desire to see movies. It's his hobby.
I have a desire to see movies. I just don't have the time that it takes to go out to the movie theater to see movies.
And he yells, "Pineapple!"
The Oscars will be on ABC on Sunday, February 9th. That is next Sunday. So join us for our Oscar discussion and see if they pick the winners. The experts pick the winners this year. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Absolutely. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. If you've got something to say, please leave us a voicemail. I will play it on the show. I would love to hear your voice. You can go to our website, toomuchscrolling.com. You can send us an email at toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm the Woodchuck. And if I'm looking for a person that can count the number of woods that I chuck.
See you in the future.
I'm looking for a score.